Good morning, and thanks for joining us today. This is Wednesday, February 19th, 2020, and it is a gorgeous day out there. I have to say, it's so nice to wake up to sunshine and blue skies and actually light. I wake up very early to get down here by 6:45, and it's gorgeous out there. I'm Susie Prez, one of the hosts of The Morning Show. That's what you're listening to. And I have my co-host across from me, Chris Bessler. Hi, Chris.
Good morning, Susie. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Yeah, it's a beautiful morning out there. There's this bright thing up in the sky. I had to kind of squint walking over here. It's so bright. But it's beautiful.
Frosty. No complaints about having to wear those sunglasses, right?
Yeah.
And even though it's only currently 18 degrees out, it feels like it's much warmer just because of the sunshine.
At least 20.
Yeah, at least 20. And we do have the morning show here. We have a lot lined up. We have actually a second interview at 9 o'clock this morning. I'll be talking with Tom Shepard. He's with the Music Conservatory of Sandpoint. He's a world-famous songwriter, has lots of top hits, and he'll be here to talk about that. But today is the morning show. Tell us what's going on, Chris.
Well, we have one guest today, but we have two big topics. We have Chris Bassett with us. Chris, thanks for being here.
Hey, so good to be here.
And you're a producer and host of a new video podcast called Bonner Breakdown, and we're going to be talking about what exactly Bonner Breakdown is. But the bigger hat you wear, Chris, is as executive director of the Bonner Community Housing Agency, which is a nonprofit organization with a mission to develop local housing and help families get into affordable housing. So the second half of our interview, we're going to be talking about housing.
Cool.
Always a good subject when we know that
big one
here. It is a really big one. And we're looking forward to hearing about that. Before we get started, though, who wants to hear about the weather?
Everybody.
You want to raise your hand? Okay. So from the National Weather Service, like I said, currently 18 degrees. We can expect sunny, and a high of 37 today. Tonight, a little bit of patchy freezing fog starting around 10 p.m., but mostly clear with a low around 17, northeast winds 3 to 5 miles per hour. I even like the cold, crispy nights. And throughout the week, it looks about the same, highs in the 40, 41, 42, sunny days and cold, crispy nights. And then on Saturday night, we move into about a 60% chance of rain or snow, a low of 28. And on Sunday, this is just for the skiers, 80% chance of rain or snow.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I know. With a high of 41. So rain down here, but maybe some snow up top.
Should be snow up there.
Yeah. At Schweitzer. So the skiers might be happy about
that. That's actually a perfect 41 down here is a good snow.
Good
snow
mix for us. A couple other things going on outdoors. The sunrise this morning was at 6:48 a.m. Although I will say I was timing it and I saw it hit at 6:55 a.m. We have these mountains right now.
Mountains just get in the way.
We get a little bit later. It'll set tonight at 5:12 p.m. Over the course of the last week, with the days getting longer as we get closer to the spring equinox, we've gained 23 minutes of daylight per day. So the days are definitely getting longer.
You can feel it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It feels like spring. Although, as we know from being around here, don't hitch your wagon to that because weather will change.
So when the alarm goes off at 5:45, it's not pitch dark anymore. You can just start to see that light coming up.
Yeah. I want to mention a couple other things. We have these beautiful, clear days and nights. We have some beautiful things happening up in the sky right now. The super bright star that you see up there is Venus, right after sunset. But if you look just below that, this is kind of the second brightest thing you see now is Mercury. And Mercury is about as bright as it's going to be all year. So it's a pretty cool thing to check out in the night sky. Of course, we have great constellations happening. Orion's really big up there. So check out the night sky, folks.
Will do, Chris. And the Sandpoint City Minute, I'll give you that right now. They have the comprehensive survey results or responses on their website. You can go to sandpointidaho.gov. Since December, they've been having these weekly surveys online, and you can go and see how that looks at this point in time. It will help influence and with the work that they're doing on the comprehensive plan, the multimodal transportation plan, the Parks and Recreation Master Plan, and the Wastewater Treatment Plan. You can also go to their website and look at all the updates on those. That, again, is sandpointidaho.gov.
Yes.
And that's the Sandpoint City Minute. But I have two more things to report.
Okay.
You have something, Chris.
Well, I always like to tell a few things going on around town. Of course, we're in the second week of Winter Carnival right now. So a bunch of Winter Carnival events happening. Fun stuff.
Yep.
There's a weird and wonderful beer fest and bar crawl, pub crawl that's happening on Saturday with Sandpoint's finest imbibing establishments to be visited. But one of the favorite things of the whole year for me, Winter Carnival or not, is the canine keg pull.
Love
that
it.
Our cars put on.
Love it.
If you've never been to that, folks, you should definitely go. It's dogs pulling appropriately sized kegs. Now, if it's a little Chihuahua, they'll be pulling a beer can. But if it's a big St. Bernard, they'll be pulling a big keg. And they race down this little course behind in the alley behind iCarts. And it's a fundraiser for the Panhandle Animal Shelter.
So they're going to bring in snow, I imagine, by the truckload.
Well, they'll need some snow for this
right.
one, yeah.
So I just want to give a shout-out to Dexter, the KRFY dog. He's Julie Calamine's dog. He is a little Chihuahua type. Little dog, and he is practicing. He is in training now. He's probably out there working on pulling the beer can.
Yeah,
so it will be a beer can.
That's awesome.
I'm going to say I had a prize-winning dog one year in this.
Ooh.
Yeah, our dog Crystal. She was quite an athlete.
Oh,
in the medium-sized dog category, she got second place. Yeah.
Well, that's fun.
Congratulations to Crystal.
We all got something to brag about.
That's right.
Yep.
Brag about our dogs.
A couple more things from KRFY. This week, once a month, we have a show called Fourth Sunday Show Tunes. And this is the week coming up, Sunday, February 23rd. And host Don Childress will be bringing you Jesus Christ Superstar. He has commentary about it. We are all, probably a lot of us, familiar with the music, but he brings it alive with commentary and anecdotal things. It's from 5 to 7. That's this Sunday, Fourth Sunday Showtime, Show Tunes, February 23rd. Also, we do podcast the morning show, so we are recording this today. If you don't get to hear all of it, you can go back and to our website. Also, we're streaming. Don't forget that. And there you go. That's my reminders for Sunday Showtime coming up this week.
Okay, well, let's get into today's topics with our guest, Chris Bassett, again. He is the producer and the host of Bonner Breakdown. It's a new podcast in town. Also, executive director of Bonner Community Housing Agency. We'll be talking about both things, but first, let's talk about Bonner Breakdown.
Sure.
Yeah. So, Chris, what is it? Bonner Breakdown. You can see, by the way, bonnerbreakdown.com is where you can see it.
Yeah. What, you know, it's interesting. I'm a big fan of podcasts, right? So, and I've, during the 2015, 2016 election cycle, I really got turned on to listening to a ton of people from all over. And I love the sit-down interviews. I just really have always enjoyed those where you can kind of get to kind of peek into a conversation that people are having. And so I've been thinking about that for a while. And one of the roles, obviously, as the executive director of the housing agency, puts me in rooms with people talking about housing, whether it's on a countywide level, citywide level, regionally. And we had these working groups that we had meeting quarterly with people from the county commissioner's office, county planning, city planning, mayors from local towns, people from Priest River, Hope, this big regional team that we call Bonner Regional Team. And we had met, I don't know, 7 or 8 times over the course of a couple of years, just talking about how do we communicate? How do we get our information out there, and how do we resolve difficult conflicts between the county and the city? Because as you can tell, even now, it's contentious and it's not an easy conversation to have. So we actually brought in a local who grew up here, Danya Ramore, who's from actually the University of Utah. And so we actually, different groups paid to bring her in and kind of help navigate these bigger conversations that we needed to have around the region. One of the issues, of course, is housing, but we talked about, you know, water treatment. We talked about expansion, different things. It was just a conversation point. one day we were in a meeting and I'm having this conversation about what are our biggest needs that each of us, all the stakeholders around the table. So, you know, you've got the Association of Realtors, Chamber of Commerce, obviously the housing agency, and you've got all these elected officials and government employees around the table to have these conversations, you know, city planners, county planners. And we're saying, what's the biggest need that we have? And I hear over and over and over communication. I keep there's this kind of a drumbeat theme that says, wow, we don't have a way to fully explain what's actually going on. We get sound bites or we get a short interview. But if you wanted to dive into a topic, it's very difficult to do that in any of the publications. And just as far as a media form, you can try and give a synopsis, but you're going to lose some detail. And no one can really ask questions. And so, and then, you know, obviously I love what our local radio stations do because we have interview shows like this that we're able to do that. But I thought, you know, hey, if you had no interruptions and you could sit down and talk for an hour, and I asked the group this, if you could sit down and talk for an hour and it could go on Facebook and be something anybody could look at, would you be interested in sitting down for that? Every hand in the room went up. And I thought, okay, I'll see what I can do. So I went around, you know, as a nonprofit, we put it out there as part of our marketing plan, and we went and got some fundraising going and talked to different local banks, talked to different organizations. And in 3 months, we raised about $8,000. Because people are like, yeah, we want to see that happen. So we built a studio in the basement of the housing agency and with the old Sandpoint Title building. We built a studio, bought a bunch of equipment, and we started broadcasting in November of at the end of October of last year. And we've done, you know, 12, 13 episodes. And yeah, we're trying to do about one a week, but I was sick for a couple of weeks. But that's kind of the origin, genesis of it. And we kicked it off during the campaign. So, yeah.
So where do you access these? Don't have to watch them live. Are they on Facebook?
No.
And you can go to a website, which I think Chris mentioned.
Yeah, BonnerBreakdown.com. But you can, if you go to Facebook and you just type in Bonner Breakdown, there's a Facebook page. That's where all the videos are. That's where we've kind of centralized all of the interactivity for the show on Facebook, because that's where a majority of the people use social media in North Idaho. So majority of social media that we find here in North Idaho all happens on Facebook. There's a few people that use Twitter, a few people that will use Instagram, which is an image-based social media. But for interactivity, we went with Facebook. So if you just all of our, no matter what the social media is, you can go to @BonnerBreakdown and you're going to find it. Mm-hmm. So wherever it is. Plus, if you like the audio and you like download on iTunes or iHeartRadio or Spotify or any of those places, you could just plug in Bonner Breakdown and it'll pull up there. And there's links to all of them on our website too.
So if you, for instance, are doing a commute and you have an hour drive, you could download a podcast and you could hear from some of our local people.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you've done about 13, 14, 15, and they're available. But what are you finding out and what are you looking for? How do you reach out to people? The premise is to help with conversation, connection, and celebration.
Yeah. And one of the things, big thing for me is to always keep everything in a positive tone. You know, I've got some guest rules, you know, for when people come in. We don't call anyone out specifically by name. If you've got beef with somebody, we're not going to hash your beef out on our show. But if you, we'll talk about the topic, we'll talk about the issue. You know, for the ability to have really in-depth conversations, we want to keep it positive, which is we always also look for something to celebrate. So we start every show off with what's called the good report. What is good happening in our community? What is the great things happening? Whether it's a watching the dogs pull beer cans, which is hilarious and super fun to watch these adult people get so animated over a puppy pulling something. It's great. But, you know, I mean, that it's like that's fun and that's a good thing for the community to participate in. So we try to find something fun. And I take 5 minutes at the beginning of every show to say, here's the good report. And I have everybody grab their cup, their mug, whatever they've got. And we're going to give a cheers to the good report, and we all take a sip together, and we move on with our day. You know, I think it's important for us to interact and come together around those things that we can celebrate. But as far as gathering up, you know, who I talk to and that kind of stuff, I've been around, been in town for 15 years and have played a lot of different roles. And so I've really just leaned into the relationships that I've had. And then, you know, from the housing side, it's opened up the doors for me to ask to have a lot of government people on because I've built relationships in that realm. So,
And some of the folks you've had on, you're covering a gamut here of the community. As you mentioned during the probably run up to the election, you had the three mayoral candidates.
I did.
On, Ken Lawrence, Shelby Ronstadt, and Shannon Williamson. Shelby won, of course, so he's the mayor now and still is.
He'll be back on soon.
So. Shannon Williamson is the city council president. So, but you've had other folks, too. You've had John and Kathy Pomeroy from the Helping Hands Healing Hearts organization,
an
important charitable work in town.
The Community Resource Center, and they got Habitat for Humanity coming on Friday. So, you know, that was part of it too, is to highlight some of the local nonprofits. I obviously in, you know, the housing agency's nonprofit work, pastored a church for 9 years. So it's like there's a lot of nonprofits that go unsung and that do a tremendous job. And so kind of wanted to hear their story, you know, and take time to hear that.
From the ones I've seen, you're digging behind just what's the group about into the lives of the people.
Right.
Because everybody has a story.
They do.
And it's interesting to hear their life path that brought them to this point where they're contributing to our community in some way.
It's very easy to forget that the people that we maybe don't like their ideas, that they're real people. Like, we just forget they're real people with a real heart and with a real family and kids and all of that kind of stuff. So that's one of the important things is to remind us that people, wherever they sit politically, wherever they sit in their community service or whatever, they have a story to tell. And nobody tends to ask the story. We want to ask, where do you stand on this? Where do you sit on this? And how do you feel about this? And all those things are important, but sometimes just in hearing the story, you can go, oh, okay, well, that makes sense why they would sit here, or that makes sense why that decision that they made looked like that, you know? So, and that was one of the fun things, about, interviewing, Dan McDonald, one of the county commissioners, because I got to hear a lot of his story that I had not heard before, about what's really, what are his passions? Like why, when he looks at government, he's looking at it from a very clear lens to him as far as how he sees it. Well, man, it was so helpful to go, oh, okay, well, that makes sense now, you know, instead of it just being that, you know, we are very quick to attach labels to people because we don't like the way they think, instead of actually thinking about how they think. So we're given an opportunity for everybody to see that. And Andy Grote, one of the new county commissioners, or I'm sorry, city council people, we actually had a conversation about the medium of, you know, the podcast and these types of conversations. It was intriguing because we ended up not, we talked a little bit about him, but we were just sitting here talking about the microphones that we're talking into. It was pretty fun. It was good.
I know that if you want to have connections and you want collaboration and you want to work effectively, biography work is an important aspect
Absolutely.
Of that. And it really leads to listening because when someone's telling their story, what are you doing but listening?
Yeah.
There's no angst there. It's just who they are.
Well, and I don't come with an axe to grind. You know, I don't, I'm always curious as to why people are, I think curiosity is a really good word that we've lost. You know, I think in leadership, I think in politics, we're just not curious anymore. We've all kind of set our camps and we are like, we're going to fight to the death. But I think curiosity is so important because you get to hear like John and Kathy Pomeroy from, you know, Helping Hands, Healing Hearts. When you hear the passion that they carry and you get to hear their story, you go, oh, I want to support that. You know, like you suddenly have a different perspective around it. But if you're not curious, you're not going to want to know. You're going to put people in their box. And so the Bonner breakdown is kind of breaking down those boxes, trying to say, okay, let's break down the divide and actually hear people's stories. So I'm excited. I've got some great guests coming up. Sage Dixon is going to come in this weekend because they're in Boise. So he's going to come up for the weekend and do an interview on Saturday with me. And then I've got people scheduled, you know, Jim Woodward and Heather Scott, different people coming in because I want to hear their story. I want to find out why, you know, where are you at? What's happening? And I also want to find out about the controversial stuff too, you know, and go, okay, well, tell me about that. What's your experience been? Because those are stories that nobody actually gets to hear. We only get the report. This is the hard part for me. Is so often I will read something and I'm like, wow, that this happened to me in the 2016 election, where I'm hearing reports of what people are saying on all sides. And then I would watch a speech or watch the whole interview and I go, they didn't say that at all. That's not actually what they said, but that's the spin that we're getting. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, well, if I could, you know, maybe have one little piece to play here locally and say, okay, can we sit down and get the whole story from your perspective, from what you see, instead of, and some people get upset because I don't grill people, but I don't feel like that's my job. Mm-hmm. Anyways, I didn't grill Chris when he came on. So.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot to
disclaimer. I get you on. And,
Chris
this
came
is
on.
This is what they call log rolling, where you interview me, I'll interview you. But actually, you know, we're both wanting to really achieve sort of the same sort of thing, even with the KRFY morning show.
Yeah, that's great.
Where we can create connections between people based on our shared experience and our shared values. And we all have shared values, even though it gets obscured by the politics.
Totally does. It totally does.
And I have found that to be true here at KRFY. We're looking for news and information that can inform and inspire, that is just not tainted with our own ideas or misconceptions.
Sure.
You know, there's that old game called the telephone game, and I think that's what you're alluding
exactly
to.
It. Yep.
It changes over two or three people. So just a little, you know, like Heather Scott and I probably have a little bit different frame of mind or points of view.
Sure.
But she grows organic food, and I grow organic food. And it's just kind of like one time she gave me the high five and she says, we have something in common. And we both were against the smelter. We'll just say that. And then I said, yeah, and we're both women who grow organic food. So, so you're forming connections and things that can bring us together and make a stronger community.
Well, and we want to, you know, we talk about conversation, connection, and celebration. So if there's a way for us in an hour conversation to find some things to celebrate, we've totally won the episode. It was a great show because we found some things to celebrate. It is interesting. You know, I had to overcome a little bit of fear to do the show because my personal bias is going to come out through the whole thing. Like, I totally get that. Like, I totally know that it's impossible to have long conversations and not have all of your personal stuff kind of leak into the ether of the show. And so I was a little concerned about that because I'm like, I want to be as impartial as possible. But then I realized, like, actually, I can preface that this is my bias and let's have the conversation. So that's been actually really good because we can have a complete conversation and ask hard questions and not have it be accusatory or anything else and to say, hey, here's kind of my bias on that. Like, can we talk about that and run after it, which is fun.
Well, the secret there is because all the reporters, journalists, you know, the talking heads, they all approach everything from inherent bias.
Correct. Yep.
But the secret here is to provide balance and let the other side tell in full what their viewpoint is on it. And you find out that things are a lot more nuanced.
They are way more nuanced than we think. Yeah.
And as you say, who they are, to really say they're give their story. Mm-hmm. And is Bonner Breakdown a nonprofit?
It is right now. We will be getting our nonprofit status separate from the housing agency. Mm-hmm. But right now it's just kind of a marketing arm.
Right. And it's not a lot of overhead right now. I mean,
no,
it's in the basement.
No. And we've got a great sponsor in Ting who gave us internet and has totally pitched in, so they get all the sponsorship. Right now, the housing agency and Ting have done a great job of supporting us.
Well, folks, if you just tuned in, we're talking with Chris Bassett about a Bonner Breakdown. This is the KRFY Morning Show with Chris and Susie on 88.5 KRFY. And Chris, so again, the place to go to get connected here is BonnerBreakdown.com. Uh-huh. Or as you said, you can find them on Facebook.
You can go anywhere on social media, podcasts, anywhere you like to listen, and just plug in Bonner Breakdown. It'll pop right up. It's a red logo. It's actually the housing agency logo with a microphone in it. And yeah, you can find it anywhere that you listen to podcasts or you want to watch a show. The most I really prefer people to go to Facebook, primarily because you can interact there easier than anywhere else. So if you have questions or sometimes I'll put the, hey, I'm having for example, this week I'll have Sage Dixon on. Do you have questions for Sage? And so I'll get a slew of questions. Sometimes people get a little irate in their question asking, which is always a crack up to me. But like, let's just ask the question, you know, and I'll ask it on the show.
Yeah.
So
as long as it stays within bounds, right? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the whole deal here is we're trying to build connections and not be accusatory, as you said. So
yeah, it's all, and you know what, people, you know, we're a funny people. Us humans, you know, we get offended and we get frustrated and we have a difficult time sometimes navigating, you know, how do we navigate that? And so, however that turns out, it ends up being just fine. So, yeah.
That's Bonner Breakdown. And, we are going to also be talking about, your bigger job here, the Bonner Community Housing Agency, and the work you're doing on local housing issues.
Sounds great.
But Susie, why don't you give us a breather here, and then we'll come back to take a musical break, and we'll come back.
Okay, to lead us into the next subject about housing, I have an old-fashioned song, and we'll send this out to Quinn. this is Malvina Reynolds' "Little Boxes," and we'll be back. And this is a very fun interview this morning. This is with Chris Bassett. We're going to go into the housing department here. This is Malvina Reynolds' "Little Boxes." Stay with us.
It is.
And that was Malvina Reynolds' "Little Boxes." And we're back in the studio live here. This is 88.5 KRFY, your community radio station. And it is Wednesday, February 19th. And I'm here with Chris Bessler, my co-host. I'm Susie Perez, and our guest,
Chris Bassett.
Hey.
Another Chris B.
Yeah. I was on our show. Like, sometimes feel like, do you own Keoki? No, I don't own Keoki.
Yeah, certain amount of confusion reigning out there. Chris, well, you are executive director of the Bonner Community Housing Agency. So a little bit of history. You know, tell us about how it got started. I know it formed up from some things that occurred in 2007 with employees at a housing summit, but
tell us a
little bit about where the BCHA comes from and what you're about.
So, you know, this market here is an amazing market because we are a resort town. It is a gorgeous place to live. People want to retire here. They want to live here. The cat's out of the bag. Sandpoint is a desirable place to live for a lot of people. In 06, 07, we had the huge pricing run up due to market and mortgage conditions, right? So I was actually in the mortgage industry at the time here locally. I worked for MetLife Bank. Here's a local mortgage representative. And during that time, you know, prices were just shooting up, very similar to the way they are now. And in that, we had a forum on housing at Schweitzer in 2007. Out of that became an employer-assisted housing working group. And that group ultimately turned into Bonner Community Housing Agency. So I was in that initial working group on the mortgage side, but I didn't participate with the group for another year. And then I was asked to sit on the board of directors there as kind of a finance guy, being able to help out in that category with the housing agency. So we didn't have any activities. We were just an advocate for employers and trying to come up with some creative ways to help employers employers deal with the housing crisis that they were dealing with. They couldn't retain employees. They couldn't afford to live here. They couldn't recruit employees. So it was just based on the affordability at the time. So in 2009, we applied for a grant from Idaho Housing and Finance Association for operating expenses in order to begin to work on developing some housing projects to actually provide housing as a developer. So that's when I also was in transition, moving out of the mortgage industry. I was actually going into full-time ministry at the time. And, you know, it just happened to work out just perfectly for me to come on staff at the housing agency. You know, our president and kind of executive director at the time was Stephen Drinkard, and he did a great job. We worked together for years, and we started off with this concept of a community land trust, thinking, man, this is going to be the way to go. We just ran into roadblock after roadblock after roadblock with financing it. And so we ended up just building houses. We built four houses in 2013. We finally got our first project off the ground, which was great. So built four houses in 2013. And when we build a house, we sell it at market value. And then we provide a down payment assistance. So whenever we sell a house, we will provide someone with 20% down or $40,000 in the form of a loan that has no interest or payments for the life of the, as long as it's their primary residence. And so that's how we help people get into houses. And then we began doing acquisitions, buying homes, rehabbing them, and then reselling them with to people with this down payment assistance, just to bring their overall monthly payment down. You know, we're required to sell it to people who make, say, less than 80% of the area median income, which, you know, for a family of four is just under $50,000 a year, you know, so currently. And it depends on household size. You know, a family of eight has to make less than $65,000. So
a family of four that's making under $50,000 could look to the Bonner County Community Housing Agency to help them get that. The big problem with getting into house, obviously, is coming up with a down payment.
Correct.
Typically for for folks.
And there's lots of low and no down payment options, but the monthly payment's high. Mm-hmm. And so that 20%, what that does is it changes the type of lending that you're getting. You move from, say, an FHA loan with 3.5% down, or say a USDA loan with no money down, to a conventional loan where you're not paying mortgage insurance. Your overall monthly payment is far lower. You're getting a much better interest rate than you would with a higher risk loan at a higher percentage rate. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So how many families have you helped?
In the home ownership program, we have, you know, turned over 17 houses, so 17 families that own here locally that wouldn't normally be able to buy a home, where we've been able to help get in the last, you know, few years. We average about two a year, you know, that we're able to do that. But we also do rental properties as well. We've got four single family rentals out at Trestle Creek, the old Bonner County Homeless Task Force ran that property out there as an emergency shelter for a season. But we ended up taking that over due to some financing things with IHFA. So we manage those rentals out there now. And we have a transitional house for people who are homeless out there.
Yeah, I'd like to circle back on that.
Yeah, sure.
But first, tell us a little bit more. You know, BCHA actually came along at a time of, you know, before the big financial meltdown when housing was just skyrocketing up.
Yep.
And then we had the big
crash.
The big crash. Yep. And now we're kind of getting back to where we were back in 2007, 2008 in terms of the dynamic here with it being.
And we're not following the national trend. So I think this is really important to understand. As a resort community, we're actually moving in resort community trending as far as our housing value is following a resort community's arc more than the national arc, because in some places, you know, prices are still going up, but that for most, there's been a leveling off that has happened in a lot of communities. It's not just jump, 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 jump. With the economy's growth and the way that the consumer sentiment is the most important thing there. Is that people feel safer and more comfortable to spend money. Usually that means that prices are just going to continue to increase when people are willing to spend more money. So you're seeing that across the board, but the arc of Sandpoint is on a much higher trajectory than the rest of the nation. We're not in the same path of appreciation that the rest. We're escalating very rapidly here. And by very rapidly, in 2018... we have a median house value according to the multiple listing service here of $222,000 for a 3-bedroom 2-bath was $222,700 in 2018. The median value in 2020, or I'm sorry, for the at the end of 2019 was $316,000.
Wow,
that's ninety some $1,000, $94,000 difference between
in a year,
1 year, well,
yeah.
in one
right.
year. Mm-hmm. And it's because those people who have capital, who have cash, who are retiring here, we're the fastest growing retirement community in the state. People are moving here in droves who have the money to pay for the homes and they don't bat an eye around it because they have the cash, mm-hmm. right? And so,
and relative to some of the areas they come from, this is still not expensive.
Oh, not at all.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a killer deal comparatively.
So I had to step out a minute, and you may have covered this, but what do you say to someone, a young couple,
sure.
who they both work, no children yet, but are thinking about making Sandpoint their home? They've been here for years,
yep.
and maybe they grew up here. What do you say? How do you...
talk to me.
Talk to me. And how do
come
they
apply.
Talk to you?
Yeah, so we set up appointments. We have home buyer education. We do a lot of different things. But the first thing that we want to be able to do is help people navigate that process and find out what can you afford and what are you qualified for. Because if you don't know that, I don't know how many people, they feel like they're in a healthy financial position. They're like, okay, we're going to go shop for a house. This happened to me when I was in mortgages a lot. And they go out shopping and they think, oh, yeah, well, we'll be able to afford that. And then, well, we look at it and we go, actually, no, you're going to have to sell your Escalade and your ski and your jet skis in order to afford a $100,000 house. You know, so a lot of people don't understand that just because you have cash flow or just because you've been able to afford some nice things doesn't mean that you can still buy a house. That's what we found a lot. Plus, the other thing to keep in mind is that you're not going to get your 5 acres in a shop up front.
Right.
Yeah, it's just like when you're starting out here, you're going to have to find some options where you can build the allow appreciation to build, allow equity to build, and have that financial stability over the years in order to turn that into that thing that you really want down the road. And who knows if that even will be possible down the road here. We don't know. But people need to start off with just getting the financial side in order. And figuring out what do you actually qualify for, talking to an IHFA approved lender, which most of the lenders here are, so that's not hard to find one. But that's usually the first step. What do you qualify for? And then if your income qualifies, according to the lender, you know, because they look at a 1,000 different items to see whether and how much money you actually make. They don't just look at your taxes. They're looking at a lot of things. So they'll look at that and say, yeah, you qualify for the BCHA program. If you do, and we've got a qualified buyer that comes in that fits our income requirements and our cash down requirements, all that kind of stuff. It's all on the website, bonnerhousing.org. So if they qualify, then we'll actually go hunt for a house for people. You know, we will find a house, buy it, rehab it, put in all the new appliances, new flooring, make sure all the inspection report is completely clear of all major issues, and then we'll sell them the house. So
getting qualified and seeing what you really qualify for,
kind of how much
the house, but then say it's $250,000 or $200,000 is what you qualify for with, and they even have a little down payment, say.
Sure. Great.
How do you even find something like that? How do you help them navigate the market that is fairly thin?
Yeah, well, you know, I would want to find out if they have any relationships with realtors. because that's a realtor's specialty, mm-hmm. is to try and find properties. When you're working as a buyer, a lot of people don't know that aren't familiar with real estate. When you work with a buyer's agent, you don't pay them. Mm-hmm. They actually don't get paid until you buy a house. And hopefully you find what you want in order to buy a house. And sometimes those are hard conversations because your expectations will not meet reality price-wise. You know, you're hoping for this, but the price point's not there. So that's part of the process of going, okay, what can we afford and where can we buy? And some people might have to commute a little bit longer, maybe buy outside of town a little bit, or maybe buy in Ponderay or Kootenai where the prices are a little bit lower than in Sandpoint. Or maybe you go to Priest River or Hope or, you know, different places, maybe Sagal. You know, you might have a little bit more commute, mm-hmm. if you like to be in town, but that's normal.
How creative do you get with things like working with the city and the coding, as far as maybe someone has a large lot, they could split it and sell it off to someone and build a small house on it?
So,
it's,
you
that
know,
kind of thing.
Yeah.
Creative,
you know,
outlook.
Yeah. There's, we don't do a lot of mm-hmm. that as far as helping people go through that process. Okay. There's a lot of amazing developers in town and builders who are very skilled at that. And most people who own property, a developer like, I'll help you. Hey, I'll help you, you know, because there's an opportunity there for them to make some money. So usually, we get approached by developers who are splitting up lots saying, hey, I can sell these two to you for pretty inexpensively. Can you build on these? And we'll start our process if we're going to do new construction.
So do you foresee any lessening in the kind of the housing shortage that we have here with developments that might be in the planning stages? I'm thinking specifically about mm-hmm. the UI property. Mm-hmm.
There's one in Ponderay that they just put on their website. That's a 70 unit construction project that they've got in planning stages. And then like U of I property, I'm not sure where all of that is today. So when we have large swaths of land that can be developed, like with the U of I property, the city was trying to purchase some of that, and the city was very interested in creating multi-use, creating multi-tiers of affordability throughout that entire project. What the current developer is going to do, I have no idea. So when it comes to, so we do have a space issue in Sandpoint, but in the county as a whole, we have a supply issue. We do not have enough supply to maintain affordability long-term. And, you know, people yell and scream about all the boxes in these little boxes from Post Falls. But they planned that out 20 years ago. Like 20 years ago, they took all of that farmland and split it up and created the developments long before they ever did it. They had a plan that was 20 years out on how they're going to fit people in Post Falls. That process is, they still haven't fully developed that whole plan yet. But when we look at what have we planned for growth-wise, we've said no. Well, I mean, that's our short answer here has been no, we don't want to grow. So we're not going to plan for growth. And since we didn't plan for growth, you know, we look at our comp plan that got changed in 2009. That literally came out of 20 years since the 70s. We hadn't touched anything for comprehensive planning in the city of Sandpoint since the 70s. So when we look in 2009, we're looking at, okay, we've got a crisis, we've got issues. And so we changed how the frontage of the houses changed, you know, and trying to make it more community oriented and things. And there wasn't, to me, there wasn't enough actual push in the comprehensive plan to say, okay, we have to tackle the supply issue. Because like in regular economics, if you have a limited supply, the price goes up. So I like what Ponderay is doing, saying, hey, we're gonna take some big chunk of land, turn it into 70 units, and try and drive some price down by allowing for more supply.
Mm-hmm. So when a development comes in, like the one you're talking about in Ponderay,
sure. Yeah.
Are they required at all to have, or affordability in that?
No. Nope.
Or is it just the way the square footages of the houses dictate that?
Well, I think the smaller the lot sizes are, and the more affordable it's going to be. I think the size of the lots are critical. And that was a really positive that came out of the 2009 comp plan in Sandpoint, allowing for accessory dwelling units and allowing for smaller lot sizes. But when you have lots where you can only fit a two bedroom, one bath, that's going to keep that price kind of suppressed a little bit. Obviously, cost of construction, all that kind of stuff is all going to come into play, which those are still going up. So they haven't really leveled off yet. So there's no actual like rule that says that if you do a development, X amount has to be this, X amount has to be this, especially in Idaho. You're not going to find that. You might find that in Seattle. For sure, you have it in Seattle. You have it in large communities like Portland and Seattle, places where the government has said, hey, we're going to drive what goes in where. We don't do that here. And that's just part of the nature of Idaho.
Well, in the free market, I would think as a developer, you'd be interested in doing the bigger places that have a higher margin for
sure.
you.
Sure, they do have a lot higher margin. Yeah. And it makes total sense to me. Like, I don't get mad at developers who are like, I'd love to help you with your little affordable housing project, but I'm going to make an extra $100,000 by one house versus doing $100,000 profit off of eight. And so, you know, that's a huge difference for them, time, expense, everything. I totally understand that. The one thing that I do ask is that local builders not get mad when we don't use local builders to build something affordable, because every time I've bid out a project locally, I've only had one builder that was willing to go there, and the price ended up being $50,000 higher than what we were bid. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a tough, the affordable housing thing is a very tough place to be, to build. It's a tough place to be. Lot sizes, it's just a difficult environment where we live.
There's a little development going on right now. I'm just driving by. I know nothing about it. It's right off of Division Street near Baldy. Mm-hmm. And they're small homes.
Walnut.
Mm-hmm. Is that fitting in the affordable housing bucket here?
Essentially, it is, because it's less expensive than the normal homes in Sandpoint. So they're, you know, two bedroom, one bath, under 850 square feet, right around there. So they're small units, but there's an opportunity for an accessory dwelling unit behind it.
They're actually building accessory dwellings.
They can.
Right now.
They can. Yeah. So,
that's a garage with an apartment above.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I think so. I think that's exactly what it is. Mm-hmm. So, and those are they're starting at $235,000. Mm-hmm. So, which is above our price range. You know, we have a maximum sales price of $233,000 for Bonner County. For affordability, that'll change dramatically this next year, just based on current pricing. But you know, that's where we're at now.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing about those on off Division and Walnut is you won't have to buy a lawnmower. There's not much of a yard, so you know, you can get real creative. And
well, and honestly, a lot of people that are retiring and they don't want a lot of space and they don't need a lot, and it's gonna work out great.
I think also young families. It's a little different than an apartment. It's still a unit on its own, but it's
and you own the whole property. Mm-hmm. You know, you own it. You know, that's a benefit for a lot of people. You're gonna get appreciation and equity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was an interesting story, and I meant to share it with you, in the New York Times on a community in California that's grappling with creating affordable housing, and the realization that you actually have to change your thinking in order to get there in some of these communities. And this particular story was about a development that came in. They were going to put in 350 housing units. The neighborhood said, no, it's way too many. You know, we don't want that many people here. So the developer came back and redesigned it for like 40 housing units. And in the meantime, the city officials changed up their point of view on it. And they came back around to wanting the 350 units to help meet the housing crisis. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing here is that we have been in this NIMBY mode for so long. Not in my backyard. Mm-hmm. The new term I saw coined with this was the YIMBY mode, which is yes in my backyard, because people in that community are starting feeling a responsibility to help provide housing. I wanted to swing
That's really good. Yeah.
Yeah, YIMBY. That's a new one there YIMBY. For you. New acronym. I wanted to swing back around for the few minutes we have left, talk about transitional housing for people that are actually homeless. What is the housing BCHA doing in that arena?
Yeah. So we have a house that has four single, what we call single resident occupancy apartments. We have a house that is a kind of almost like a group home. So you have four bedroom and bathroom units that are isolated with a group kitchen and living area. And group, you know, refrigerators and all that kind of stuff. So the transitional housing costs $275 a month. It's for people who generally are employed but found themselves, they're the working homeless. So they're people who have a job but their situation fell apart, or they've been in a maybe one of the things that we have people who are in addiction recovery. Who have, you know, stayed somewhere like, say, Sweet Magnolia, and the work that they're doing at that addiction house or their men's house or different places where they can say, okay, now I'm ready to get out. I've got a vehicle. I need to get on my own. And so we've actually taken graduates from Blue Haven, you know, different people that are able to go out there and stay. They pay, it's a flat fee, $275 a month. We work with Kinexu Health Services to provide basic support services for people who have found themselves homeless. So the mental health, physical health, all that kind of stuff. We have some supportive services for people who are out there. But that's what we're able to do right now. We have two people out there. We have two open spaces, and we're taking applications. So if somebody's like living out of their car and they got a job, see us. Come talk to us, because we would love to get you in there. And even if you're between jobs, we raised a bunch of money over the winter to help people, give people a month of kind of reprieve to get into a place, to get into this unit. So,
So if any of this we're talking about, if you're looking to buy a house and you need that kickstart to get you in there, if you actually are in a crisis and you're in a homeless situation, how do people connect with you?
Yeah, so you would call us 208-263-5720, or you could go to bonnerhousing.org or at Bonner Housing on all the socials as well. We'll pick up anything that you press. If you want to email's at the website, all that kind of stuff. So all of those things will get you to us. Denise Marley, a local gal who's amazing. She actually is my project manager coordinator. So she handles all the rentals and does that. So.
And you have an office right here in town. So people, you can right connect downtown. With you and get
our,
to you.
Our front door looks at Roxy's back door. So
I'm just going to say that phone number again, 208-263-5720.
Yeah.
And that's the place to call. There's other ways to get there, but that's one of them.
We're in there 4 days a week, so. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much. This is fascinating.
Yeah, awesome.
It's wonderful to know that an organization is holding the fort as far as affordability for housing in our community.
We're advocating.
I think of the word neighborhood. You know, how does that look? Who are we? And looking at our community.
Yeah. I know we got to go, but the reality is that we want to help people manage it on their own. So we don't, like, one thing I'll just say, there's no handouts. It's all loans. They all got to pay it back, you know. So it's just, we're just trying to help them get in the door.
Well, that's great work. And we really appreciate the work that the Bonner Community Housing Agency has done since way back when. And you mentioned Stephen Drinkard helping get it, kicking it off, and and the important work that it's doing.
Yeah, he was great.
Yeah, thanks so much, Chris Bassett. I would just want to remind everyone, if you did not get to hear the whole thing, we did record this. It will be a podcast on our website, krfy.org. And also, I have coming up at the top of the hour, right after Bird Note, an interview with a nationally known songwriter, Tom Shepard and Nathan Baker from the Music Conservatory of Sandpoint. So after Bird Note, stay with us to hear this exciting interview. And we may even have some music. I don't know if he brought his guitar or not. And this is the morning show. Who's our guest next week, Chris? We have PAFE.
Yeah, Panhandle Alliance for Education. We're going to be talking about their big event that's coming up, a demo day on Schweitzer Mountain. It's a big fundraiser for them, and it's a lot of fun for people that like to get out and do things that combine fun with fundraising.
Well, I love demos.
Yeah.
Another great interview. Again, Chris Bassett, thank you for being with us. We're going to go out with a song and then be back with our second interview this morning right after Bird Note. This is John Prine, In a Town This Size. Stay with us.